Okay, I want to welcome everybody to an exciting presentation. Bez Hashem, I have two very short hakdamas. We're going to be discussing a very, very exciting topic today. I'm sure some of them heard. We're going to be discussing the topic of Tcheles Bezman Hazeh. We all know that the Pasuk says, V'nosu, we read it every day, twice a day in Krishma, V'nosu Maltzitzes HaKonof Psil Tcheles. Right, there's a mitzvah de'araisa, leis man debalik, there's a mitzvah de'araisa to wear tcheles on your tzitzis, and if you're not wearing tcheles on your tzitzis, you're not fulfilling a mitzvah de'araisa. The issue is that, unfortunately, tcheles, we know, has to come from a chilazon. Chilazon, unfortunately, we don't know, for the last almost 1,500 years, we don't know the identity of what the chilazon is. And therefore, no one was wearing chilazon. You're still fulfilling mitzvah de'araisa of tzitzis. The Mishnah Menachos, Tcheles Ein Makas Alavim, Lavim Ein Makas Tcheles. Of course, you could still fulfill the mitzvah. Now, here's where the question starts. Around close to 100 years ago is where the first suggestion came along from the Ritzinner Rebbe, and since then there have been a few others, Rav Herzog, the more recent one, a few different suggestions of what the identity of the chilazon might be, and the nafka mina would be that if we could figure out what the chilazon is, maybe we would all be mechuyev in wearing tcheles. On our tzitzis, just like we were originally. So now, that's two questions, really. First of all, are any of these suggestions correct in terms of that's the chilazon? And even if it is correct, should we be wearing tcheles today? That's the hakdama aleph. Hakdama beis, and this is probably even more important than the last hakdama, is that we're going to be having, Baruch Hashem, we have two tremendous talmid chacham here. We're going to have a meridik, a rischa deraisa here. But everyone should know that halacha doesn't work this way. Meaning, halacha doesn't, if I have a shayla on my tefillin, I have a shayla on my mezuzah, I don't go to a geshmak ashir, and based on that shir, oh, now I'm going to start doing this. Now I'm going to start, you don't say, oh, so we come out of today's shir, I come out that I'm very convinced tcheles is treif, so I go over to shul and I just start yanking off everyone's tcheles, no? Or, the other way, everyone just, oh, okay, that's it, I'm throwing off my love and I'm wearing tcheles. The way halacha works is a bachur has a shayla, a young man has a shayla, you go to your rav, you ask the shayla. There's a halachic process. You don't just go to a shir and decide what to do. Right? However, what we're doing here, the main point here is to have a discussion so we could come out, everyone with a clarkite to understand the tutsadim. So now we're going to, as Shem, we're going to begin. Now, who's going to go first?
Coin toss? Mm-hmm. You all right. Okay, so I want to just, first of all, start just by echoing what Rav Olovik said. Which is just, in terms of, I want everyone just for a minute, just to think, they discovered the Murex trunculus as being a potential of what the chilazon is about 40 years ago. Think who the goyim were in the last 40 years. Just think of a couple. Just off the top of your head, think of a couple. I'm sure you can. Not a single one of the ones you can think of wears tcheles. Not one. Now, that's not to say there are no great rabbis who do wear tcheles. There are. There are certainly great rabbis who wear tcheles, but every single one of the dolim. And that's how halacha works. Is that in halacha, when you're going to turn halacha, you're going to look at who are the greatest people in a generation, how do they decide, and also, if your rav goes ahead and he wears tcheles, that's fine. You can follow your rav, if he is your rav, that's fine. That's totally cool. But, in general, when you're looking at something, you're trying to figure out what the halacha is, the first step we're going to be doing is we're going to say, how does Klal Yisrael hold? How does the Rabbanim hold? And it's unquestionable that the way Klal Yisrael hold, the way the Golem hold, is certainly to assume that New York's trunkless is not the tcheles. Now, I just want to address what is the thing that most people think about, which is the archaeological finds. How much time do I have?
You have another 2 minutes.
Another 2 minutes. All right. Let's see how much we get to in 2 minutes. Okay, I want to just address the archaeological finds because they are the first thing everyone thinks about is we have a massive area with archaeological, full of New York's trunkless shells. It's there. We do not have anything else that we're aware of. The only thing that could potentially be the chilazon, the only thing that we know of that it could be, that really makes sense, that we have archaeological evidence for being, is the Murex trunculus. That being said, we know if you go through history, you read through all the history books, the Murex trunculus was always being used to dye purple. Murex trunculus was never being used to dye blue, it was always used to dye purple. Throughout the history books, that was always the purpose. Now we do have a total of 3 garments which were dyed blue. There is a way that you can do that they wouldn't be able to do back then. Pashtus, the way that they're doing it now, they're adding all kinds of chemicals, which they would not have had access to. It's difficult to know whether or not they could have ever made blue with our they certainly could not have done it the way we could have. Going back the way that they were able to, with the methods that they would have had, could they have possibly had a way that would have made blue? It's difficult to say. It's a possibility, but the fact of the matter is that one way that could work would be if you double dip. If you dip everything in twice, you dip once, the first time will come out purple, dip a second time, that will come out blue, because the red part of it comes out in the first one. However, you do that, it's possible for tefillas. So the assumption is, the Gemara is very clear about this, that if you dip twice, double dipping is no good. The Gemara is explicit about that. There's no question. So it does not seem like they ever could have done it, and all the shells that we do find would all be perfectly explained if we assume that they were being used for dyeing purple. We know that they were dyeing purple. Purple existed. There was certainly unquestionable that they were dyeing purple from the Murex Chunculus. And as far as we're aware, that seems to have been the purpose. Okay?
Your response?
So first of all, So Rabbi Wunzenberg already committed a debate fallacy, which is appeal to authority, right? So generally speaking, in a debate, it's not considered good form to just appeal to someone else's authority as the basis for one's argument. You don't say, well, the Gedolim said. In this case, it's a little different because it's halacha, so we do have to go with Gedolim. But generally speaking, since as Rabbi Volovic prefaced, we are not making a claim here with respect to what any individual person should do, I don't know that it's relevant whether the Gedolim did or did not choose to wear tchelef themselves. But substantively, I did speak to one Adam Gadol, my own Rebbe, and I spoke to him about this question, and his response to that point regarding the Gedolim was, while there may be arguments, strong arguments in favor of the tchelef being produced from the Murex Chunculus, it's not compelling enough to say that everyone must do that. And the Gedolim most likely would feel that if they would start wearing it, it would be seen as sort of a directive that everybody must, exactly the way Rabbi Wunzelberg is saying, and that would probably be too much. And so perhaps it's the case that many Gedolim, while they may have privately liked the arguments, didn't want to be in a position where their actions would be indicative of a psak, sort of implicitly. So that's the first response to that point. And then with regard to the purple-blue question, so there's two responses to that. First of all, we do have evidence that that the Murex Chunculus was used in ancient times for blue production and purple production. Many of the lists of colors include both blue and purple. That's first of all. And second of all, generally, in ancient times, they didn't categorize color in the same way that we do today, and it's very possible that the two, because of their proximity and color scales, would have been grouped together under one general description. And so it's hard to infer exactly, but like I said, we do have lists that list both blue and purple as being produced from the Murex Chunculus, and we'll get more into that a little bit later.
You are now your opening statement.
Yeah. So I just want to lay out a little bit of a story. As the Roman, how much time do I have?
Three minutes.
Okay. So as the Roman Empire was expanding eastward from Rome, which is in Italy, in Central Europe, as they're expanding eastward, it becomes very important for the leadership of the Roman Empire to be able to establish its importance and its authority throughout all of its territories. One of the things that the Roman Empire and the Roman Emperor and the Roman leadership in general does is they start slowly restricting the use of this rich purple dye for clothing that's being worn by regular people. And we find different decrees over the course of the 3rd, 2nd, and 1st century before the Common Era, somewhat limiting the use of this blue and or purple dye. And as we go into the Common Era, around the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, we find much more explicit instructions to stop using this blue purple dye for personal use. And then the 4th century and the 5th century, there is basically decrees that say that production and use of this blue and purple dye for personal use is punishable by death. So this is right around the time of the middle of the Tkufa Amoraim, let's say around the time of Rava, and the Romans do not allow any more use of purple or blue dye anywhere in their territories. And basically, over the next few centuries, the knowledge of how to extract this blue and purple dye from the Myrox trunculus, which is a snail that was found all around the Mediterranean, the knowledge of how to produce this dye from the snail disappears. And by the time the Roman Empire falls and their decrees are no longer relevant, nobody knows how to produce this anymore. Coincidentally, this timeline that I just laid out corresponds beautifully with the use and then the loss of Tcheles for Klal Yisrael. The Tanaim still talk about using Tcheles. During the Tkufa of the Amoraim, we see more and more references to its scarcity. And by the time we get to the Gaonim, which is roughly 7th century, 8th century, 9th century, they all talk about it in past tense and nobody's using it anymore. This timeline helps us understand what happened to Tcheles and how it's very, very plausible that this Myrox trunculus, which was the source of a blue and purple dye that was used for exclusively for royalty during the early medieval period, has since had been gone for like Rabbi Volovic said, 1,500 years, and now with recent explorations and different scientific investigation, there has been a revival in the ability to extract the dye from the Myrox trunculus in the way that corresponds to Chazal and the Rishonim.
Yeah. Your response?
Okay, wow. Quite a lot of issues over there. Number one, here's where the Myrox trunculus lives. Everyone that's in blue. I took this picture from Wikipedia. The Roman Empire did not control about 90% of that. It did control where the Jews lived in Israel. However, by this point, we had Jews living all over the place. If it was the Myrox trunculus, and the whole thing, reason why we stopped was because of those Roman decrees, we had Jews living here, we had Jews living here, we had Jews living all over the place that would have had plenty of access with absolutely no decrees against them. Additionally, you mentioned Rava. Now, Rashi, I'm not like, this is basics in the Gemara. Rashi on the Gemara says, who were the officers? They were Persians. They were not Romans. So let's just be clear, we have no evidence that the Persians ever made any laws against the Myrox trunculus. And we do have evidence that the Romans made laws against the Myrox trunculus, but not relevant to the Gemara according to Rashi. Now there is a Maritz Chiyus who learns that it was the Romans. He learns the whole Gemara differently, learns the whole thing differently. We also have a Ben Yoyada, but he's also Bechlal. First of all, again, take the Ben Yoyada over Rashi and the Ikar Rishonim, tremendous Chiddush. And even the Ben Yoyada, he's learning the whole decree was different. Because the Ben Yoyada says the decree was an anti-Semitic decree to get the Jews to stop keeping Yiddishkeit, as opposed to if you read through Justinian and Theodicus, who were the two sources. First of all, Theodicus doesn't even mention blue at all, just purple. And Justinian does mention something that might be blue. A lot of questions about that. Very difficult to say it is blue. I just want to show you. I'm running out of time. Okay. These are the three snails, which are commonly used for dyeing. And these are the three colors that they make. In all likelihood, those are the three things that they were decreeing against. Almost certainly, those are the three colors that they were decreeing against. So to go ahead and make that type of claim, to base this on the Gemara, to base this on the history, to me seems like amaranthus.
Okay.
Sorry, I know you're dinner chairman. I hope I'm still getting my steak.
So as far as the prevalence of the Myrox trunculus all throughout the Mediterranean area, and the fact that the...
Sorry, not just the Mediterranean, it's also well into the Atlantic.
Right. So it's true that towards the end of the period we talked about, there would have been Jews throughout North Africa and towards the Atlantic. One of the reasons why the Romans restricted, and yes, it was the Romans who restricted, there's extensive evidence and writings, not just archaeological evidence, but writings that we have from that time period, that the Romans were the ones who restricted use of the blue and purple dye. One of the reasons they restricted it is because there was extensive overproduction in this time period, and they were running into real scarcity issues, and that's why they increased the limitations on the use. You know, there was no concept of sustainable farming back then. They didn't know how to effectively fish with, while preserving the population, and so they slowly lost, and essentially they had a near extinction situation with the Merops trunculus, which is most likely why the Romans so severely limited its use. As far as whether it was the Romans or the Persians, like we said, there's extensive evidence from not just from Theodosius, but also we have other writings from Pliny and others that clearly talk about the Romans using and then restricting the Merops trunculus, which produces, like we said, blue and purple. There's another Merops that produces red, but that is a different snail. We'll get to that maybe.
Let's just ask a question here, because we're getting a lot into history. I want to deal also with some halacha. The question, and this one's going to be more directed towards Rabbi Winselberg, who you could tell is defending the purple team. One of the most compelling arguments that people have said towards the validity of the murex as being the chilazon is that Chazal tell us, and we learned this in Shir, that there's this concept called kali ilan. We know Chazal tell us that you're supposed to be dyeing your tchelos from chilazon, but unfortunately, chilazon is very expensive. So even in the times of Chazal, there were fakers. And they found through archaeological evidence people who had the fake stuff on their tzitzis. It's clear people were not able to afford it, so they painted their tzitzis blue with other things. The Gemara says, therefore, it's usr. Chazal made a gazette where geyser and isr, that you can't put kali ilan, which some translate as indigo, on your tzitzis. Now the problem is that if we know that there were other things. If indeed, let's go back. What do we for sure know? We for sure know that 1,500 years ago, everyone was using chilazon to dye their tzitzis, tchelos. Right? 1,500 years ago was already shaky, maybe 2,000 years ago. We also for sure know that this murex snail was around, and people were using it to dye, maybe purple, maybe blue, other things. Wouldn't it be a little bit funny that if there's more than one source to be able to, blue and purple were not very common colors, very difficult colors to obtain back then. Wouldn't Chazal have wanted to warn you not just against Kali Ilan, say, don't use this murex thing. That many bring is a proof that, no, we see murex must be the tchelos. Do you have a response to that?
Okay, to me, I'm shocked that anyone would ever make such a suggestion. In the beginning, somebody else mentioned that to me. I said, there's not a chance that you're going to say such an unintelligent argument. Not a chance.
Luckily, I didn't say it.
I'm very glad. Yeah. In reality, like, that would be, like, if I have to warn you to go ahead, I'm scared that somebody's going to try to sell me silver that's not real silver. So what do I have to warn about? I have to warn about someone's going to try to sell me stainless steel and pass it off as silver. So I have to be worried that someone's going to try to pass off platinum and sell that as silver? Makes absolutely no sense. Now we should have to be worried that I'm going to try to pass off something that's way more expensive. Kala Elon was simple. You take it from an indigo plant, very cheap. That's a concern. There's no concern that I'm going to now go ahead and take something that's 1,000 times more expensive and try to pass that off. I would never do that. The whole thing doesn't make any, I don't know. To me, it's a ridiculous argument.
Yeah. Well, again, this is all counterfactuals, but I suppose the argument is that maybe there was something even more rare and even more scarce than the Merops trunculus that was being used for regular tcheles, and the premise of Rabbi Vlovic's hypothetical question is that the Merops trunculus would have been a notch down from that, still better than Kala Ilan, still more expensive than Kala Ilan, but that if there was in fact something else, which is what you're saying, that it's not the Merops trunculus but it's something else, well, that something else would have been more rare, more scarce, more expensive, and Chazal should therefore have warned not to use Merops trunculus.
You're making the fake with the $1 fake, not the $10,000
exactly.
fake.
Exactly. Well, maybe not. Maybe you want a better one.
Yeah. They look the same.
So now a question directed towards you. I know you didn't want to get onto the authority argument, but I think at the end of the day, for most people who are going to decide halachically not to wear tchelos, the Iker argument is going to be dealing with not just the Gedolim from today's Dar that did not accept it, but also when the Radziner Rebbe came around 100 years ago, the Chavetz Chaim, the Beis HaLevi, the Rietzel Chanon, the Oid, the Oid, the Oid, all were not even Choshish, not even as a Safek Deraisa for his Tcheles. And it seems to be from the letters, it was without even looking so much into it. So why? I think that's the kasha is going to be bothering people most. So I think it would be nice to address it. Why not? Why are these gedolim not being chayshish for it?
So let's talk about the Beis Halevi, who we have the most in writing from. From the Beis Halevi's responses, it's actually quite clear that he understood exactly the opposite of what you're saying. The Beis Halevi clearly says that if you could prove to me, Radzina Rebbe, that what you have is the right thing, then I would say that everyone is mechuyev to wear it. He says, it just so happened that you got it all wrong. He said, there's no way that the cuttlefish is the right source for the tcheles, because then how do you explain how we lost the tcheles? The cuttlefish had been available for everybody throughout all of this time. How would we have lost this tradition of how to produce tcheles? So he says, since you, Radzina Rebbe, are not explaining the whole story to me, you're not providing a narrative that explains how we lost the tcheles, I'm going to reject this. And then he has some other technical problems with the cuttlefish. But it's clear from his response that fundamentally, if he would find something, or someone would present him something that did come with a compelling narrative and a compelling story, and compelling technical arguments, then he would go along with it. So I think that actually, in many cases, some of the responses to the Radzina Rebbe actually do at least suggest that had they been presented with the Murex trunculus and the methodology that's used today to extract the dye from it, that very likely they would have at least not rejected it in the way they rejected the Radzina Rebbe's.
Okay, so that was a lot of cherry picking, as you're aware. That first of all, in the Beis Halevi himself, he says a lot of other things. He says as well, we got to get into the Shal Avicha, we get into the Shal Yom Rulach, we go by Masorah, he's very clear about that over there. And as well, picking the Beis Halevi was also not fair, because it was every single Gadol all the time. The Radzina Rebbe, it drove him crazy that none of the Gadolim even like thought it was even within the realm of possibility, they refused to even deal with it. So to go ahead and pick a small piece, the Beis Halevi does say that is a piece of what he says, but to me that's kind of cherry picking.
Okay, now we're going to ask for anybody in the crowd who has questions.
The Radzina Rebbe, yeah? You agree with the same tchelas that he says? Do you think that's the tchelas today?
So maybe we should back up and say, it's definitely not. We're talking about two completely different things.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely different things. Maybe we should actually just quickly recap this, if it's okay with you. I'm sure some of the ilum here is familiar with this, but we should recap that there's essentially over the last 100 years, there's essentially been three arguments for the source of tcheles. One is the Radzina Rebbe's, which is from the cuttlefish.
This is cuttlefish ink.
Cuttlefish ink. Yeah. Okay. The Radzina Rebbe turns out was wrong, not so much because he made a mistake, but he was duped. Essentially, he was tricked by some people who, you know, saw a good profit opportunity. So he was tricked. His tcheles is clearly not, it doesn't comply with almost any of the definitions of Chazal or the Rishonim. Then Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog wrote his dissertation, actually, about tcheles. And he had a different source, which is also a snail.
Gentino.
Right? Much closer
this one's delicate.
Yeah. Much closer to the parameters given by Chazal and the Rishonim, but also fails on some technical areas. Particularly producing it at scale doesn't really seem to work so well. And then more recently, in the late 1900s, was this discovery of the Murex trunculus and the technical sort of processes necessary to produce it and get the right color and consistency out of it that could actually be scaled for tcheles production. So there's three different sources, and today most of the tcheles that you'll see, if you go into Tovia's or Beis HaSfarim or any of the local Judaica stores, and you see something that they're calling tcheles, generally speaking, they're talking about what's being produced by a company called Ptil Techelet in Israel, and they're extracting the dye from the Murex trunculus, And that's pretty much what we've been talking about here all along. Now, if I may just one more second, there's a general question about whether we should be looking for any of these, whether we should be looking at all for tcheles nowadays. Maybe we just don't do tcheles anymore at all. Forget about what the source is. Even if we would 100% find the right source and we would all agree on the right source, maybe we don't do tcheles anymore because, as Rabbi Winsbrook suggested, we don't have a mesorah. Or as some have argued, because the Arizal says that we don't have tcheles bizman hazeh. That's a general question about no matter what the source is. And then there are the specific questions about the different potential sources, which is what we've been talking about and focusing specifically on the Mirax Trunculus. We haven't really gotten into the issues with the Retzina Rebbe's Tcheles or with the Rav Herzog's Tcheles. So sorry for the digression.
No, we don't. Any other questions for the crowd? Rabbi?
What's the downside of wearing
Tcheles? That needs to be addressed there by Winsenberg, because I don't think there's any downside. I think that there's nothing to be lost by trying it.
Okay, I'll take that question. Yeah, I think it makes more sense for me to address that one. Okay, so there's basically five.
And you came prepared for it, clearly.
Yeah, there's basically five issues. Number one is a terrible disrespect to the Gedolim. That's just straight off the bat. The Gedolim are the ones who we Paskin Altar. We live and die based on the words of Gedolim. I'm sorry. I agree with you that it's bad form to make arguments from authority, but when it comes to halacha, like you said, we live and die from the words of Gedolim. So to go ahead and say all the Gedolim all said that is not it, but I know better, to me that's tremendously, tremendously disrespectful. That's number one. Number two, we'll skip number two. Okay, we'll skip that one.
Have Gedolim said it's not it?
What?
Have Gedolim said that's not it, or if we just don't know?
So you have both in the Gedolim.
If they say that it's it, then they're not Gedolim, okay. I guess.
you have both of them in the Gedolim. Pretty much what happened from all the Gedolim is that overwhelmingly they refused to get into it. They said, I'm not touching this. Now the Gedolim, nobody loves Torah and mitzvahs more than the Gedolim. There's nobody cares more about Klal Yisrael keeping Torah and mitzvahs than the Gedolim. And from the fact that the Gedolim refused to get into it, tells me that they understood that the whole thing was a waste of time. Even Rav Herzog at the end of his life writes, I finally understand the Chavetz Chaim, and they said, it's not worth your time wasting time on this. Anyway. Another point is that Rabbi Yasha points out that you're losing out on the hiddur, that we have a hiddur that the string should be the same color as the beged. So now if you're wearing tcheles, that doesn't apply. But if you're not wearing tcheles, so we have a hiddur, Rabbi Yasha pasna, that it seems to be pretty pasha, that's how we pasna, although it is a machlokas, I will grant you that. It seems to be pretty pasha that we pasna like Rabbi Yasha, that if you're wearing strings that are not the same color as the beged, that's a chisaron of the tcheles, and it seems to be pretty pasha that applies to all eight strings, not just six of them. Although there's room to argue with that.
I'll just reserve that. It's clearly not pasha, because it's clearly machlokas rishonim.
It is definitely a machlokas.
Yeah.
I did agree that it is a machlokas.
You can also make some of your beged tcheles, then you're good.
So the pashas, we also go by the rov beged. Again, a whole show. Okay. That is a. So you're asking now, what do you have to lose? Here's a potential of something you may have to lose. Well, can I tell you unquestionably that's a loss? No, it's not unquestionably a loss. It is a potential loss. Another one is Rabbi Shai Perlau, writes explicitly in his Hagohos on the Ridziner Tcheles. He says that if you, based on the Psikdir of Kana, if you wear false Tcheles, you're violating the law of Losisa. It's a tremendous Kiddush, but it's again, if you're trying to tell me what do we lose, we have that one of the Gedolei Hador said that you're violating the law of Losisa. Another thing is that the Ben Ish Chai says that if you wear false Tcheles, the Sitra Achra loves to attack that. And the Sitra Achra will cling to the... I don't know what this means. But the Ben Ish Chai writes it right there on the Gemara. The Ben Ish Chai right there on the Gemara says that if you... the Gemara of Tola Kali Ilan, that if somebody wears fake Tcheles, then the Sitra Achra comes and attaches itself to you and it's all kinds of problems.
You probably turn off your phone on the airplane also, right?
So again, you're asking me, what do I have to lose? These are major things that... When you go through the Rishonim, we didn't even get to the Gemaras, we're basically out of time. I'm going to tell you it doesn't fit with half the Gemaras, you're going to tell me it fits with all of them. Okay, we didn't even get to any of that. To me, it's so not even a Shiloh, and I have major things that I may potentially lose. Now, some of them you can argue with, but at least these are real things that you can potentially lose with.
Okay. But Brody had a question.
What's the strongest argument? I still haven't heard. We started from the Nay side. What are the one or two strongest arguments?
That's the question for each of us.
Yeah, Well,
it's a question for both of us, right?
Well, the name, really, yes, the first prove it is before you prove it's not.
All right.
So what is the strongest one or two arguments that this new thing that they found in 1960 is this, like, I just have no idea, so prove to me that it is.
So,
starting from zero.
So to keep it very, very brief, the Murex trunculus, which is what we're talking about, is a snail. It meets the descriptions given by Chazal for the source of Tcheles, which is where it comes from, which is around the Mediterranean, near the northern part of Eretz Yisrael into Lebanon. It's a snail, it's a chilazain. It matches up with a lot of the descriptions of Chazal. It was used in ancient times for the production of dye, particularly blue and purple dye. It was used by royalty as a dye for royal things, and it meant that the explanation of when it was in use, when it stopped being in use, matches up both the historical record and the record of, you know, Klal Yisrael using and stopping to use Tcheles. So those are the basic outlines of the argument. There's a lot of technicalities and certain specifics that we can argue over, obviously. But that's generally the argument. And if you review the evidence sort of systematically, there's a compelling case that even if it's not the only source of Tcheles or not the original source of Tcheles, it's certainly a source of Tcheles, and it works and it matches all of the parameters that Chazal gave. So why not use it? Back to the other question earlier, what do we have to lose? Because it seems to match up on the technicalities, and there doesn't seem to be a downside. It's not a kala ilan. This whole question of, well, maybe it's kala ilan and maybe we're falsifying, it's not relevant to this, because the curse that Chazal gave to someone who wears kala ilan, that's talking about someone who's trying to deceive either himself or someone else, or Kadosh Baruch Hu, Kivyachal. Here, it's not what anyone's doing. We're making our best attempt at wearing the right thing. It's like saying, you know, we try to get the right lulav, we try to get the right esrog, we try to wear the right tefillin. We're making our best shot at it. So that's not kala ilan. It has nothing to do with the question of kala ilan.
Can you give a brief response?
All right. Okay. I disagree with basically everything he said. Obviously, pretty much start to finish, I disagree. But again, we need a two-hour debate to go through everything. I'm just going to give you one disproof. If you come and catch me another time, I'll tell you a different one will be my favorite disproof. Right now, this one's the one I just saw this one for the first time. It was so obvious to me. I don't know how I missed it. But this is just such an obvious disproof. So the way they disproved that it's not the cuttlefish, which is this. Sorry, this is cuttlefishing. The way they disproved it is they went through the Redziner's Mahalach, and they showed, hey, you do the same thing with everything else. You take ox blood, the same thing happens. So the process that they do, what do? Essentially, you're starting off with purple. And now the whole process, you're adding all the chemicals, putting in sunlight, getting everything, doing the whole process, what does that do? That gets rid of the red. So what are you left with? Purple minus red equals blue. It will also work with this. It will. You go through the same process with this one, with the Brandaris, go through the same process, you get blue. So to tell me this lechilazo, not that, it works with other things. It works with all the snails that were being used to make colors. That's the fact.
Okay, let's have closing statements. Start with Ray Becker.
Okay, so I'll just close by acknowledging that that the way we pask in halacha, the way we make decisions in halacha, is based on speaking to rabbanim, getting a psak. Those who are on that level have the achrayus to learn sugyas themselves and reach their own conclusions and then test those against the discussions with gedolim. We all have an achrayus to do that. So I acknowledge that nobody should look to change what they do based on our conversation here or even based on what you learned throughout a whole zman in halacha shir. That's not how things work and not how things should work. And misora is very, very important. At the same time, like Rabbi Volovic said in the beginning, that there's no question that we've been missing out on a part of the mitzvah d'oraisa for nearly 2,000 years. And we have an opportunity now to potentially reclaim the tchelas portion of tzitzis, and who wouldn't want to have that opportunity to do that? And if we have a plausible source for the tchelas, one that meets the descriptions given by Chazal and the Rishonim, and can be obtained, who wouldn't want to try to do that? At the same time, it would not be appropriate for me, or any real Rav, or any Posek, or any Gadol, to say that everyone must go out and get this, because it has not been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. And in general, we don't change public policy and tell people they must do something without extremely overwhelming, compelling evidence. So again, I believe that it's very plausible that this is the source. It's very likely. In my understanding of the sugyas, it matches up. In my understanding of the history, it matches up. But at the same time, I concede that there's no reason why anyone should try to convince somebody else to compel somebody else to buy the tefillos and start wearing it. But I do very much appreciate the opportunity to share this with the Ilum here. And we should continue learning and debating these things.
Closing statement.
Okay, wow, that was beautiful. Thank you. I finally agree with almost everything you said there. Just one little piece I disagreed with.
First of all, thank you so much. This was so much fun. It's a shame we didn't have 2 hours for this, because
yes,
we didn't discuss a single Gemara.
It's true.
So, like, what a waste. All the good stuff we didn't get into. But I want to really just thank you so much for being willing to do this. This was excellent. I want to thank you all for being here. This was great. And yeah, ultimately, the Gemara tells us, Tcheles Dom Eliyam. And really, the fact of the matter is, that it's not just Dom Eliyam in terms of the color, that it's blue. It's also Dom Eliyam in terms of you're going through an ocean. And ultimately, when you're traveling through an ocean, the ones you want to rely on are our sailors, our Gedolim. And they're the ones who lead the way. I'm coming back to the same argument from authority, I'm sorry. But ultimately, that's what it's going to be. That's the ones who lead the light. I hope everything's okay. I hope you still are willing to give me the steak tomorrow. And I'll see you tomorrow night. Should be awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rebecca Levin.